Oh, Harriet.
My name is Harriet Tubman. I was born in the shadow of slavery, but I walked in the light of liberty, and I heard voices calling me. And when they called, rockets burst in my head, and the earth moved under me. And as the voices of my forebears guided me, my voice helped guide my heirs toward their destination, freedom.
Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. One year ago, Destination Freedom made its first broadcast to NBC listeners. Since that time, the growth of its audience and the commendation, as well as the special recognition given it by critics and listeners alike, have made us justly proud of the record and quality of our year-old feature. Today, in celebration of our first anniversary, we bring you a special dramatization of excerpts from some of Destination Freedom's best plays of the year in a chapter entitled Harriet's Children.
Oh, Harriet.
Yes, I'm Harriet Tubman. I ran an underground railway in the days of slavery. I was the first conductor of the Freedom Train, and my cargo was human documents of independence. They say I freed more men from their chains than any American woman. If I did, it was because of the voices. I heard the voice of Crispus Attucks as it came down to me from the year 1760 when he escaped his bondage, as I was to escape mine.
I am Crispus Attucks. I escaped from slavery. I walked, I ran, I crawled through swamps to freedom, made my way to the docks of Boston, and went aboard a whaling ship and asked the skipper for a job. The sailors gathered around, looked at the strange sight that was me.
This scarecrow wants to sign on board, skipper.
He's got his nerve.
Then fetch him an outfit, mate. I'll take him on.
Take him on? He just walked in from nowhere, skipper. We don't know a thing about him.
Here. Since when did we start asking men for their pedigrees aboard my ship? All I want to know, is he loyal to the colonies or to the king? Which is it, laddie?
I'm loyal to whichever side leads to freedom.
Yeah. Fair enough. Mate, fetch him punch.
Aye, sir. Yeah,
you've had a hard time of it, eh, laddie?
I won't deny it.
We'll all have it hard until America's a free country and... Say, you got those punch, matey?
Aye, sir.
All right, laddie. Now let's see if they fit you.
Yes, sir.
And stand up straight.
I'm standing up straight, sir.
I said hold your legs straight, man, so I can see if they're long enough.
I am holding them straight, sir.
No such thing. Are you trying to make a fool of me?
Hey, skipper.
Eh?
No wonder he ain't standing straight. He's got knock knee.
He's got what?
Knock knee. Hey, man, take a look at that.
Well, bless my soul. He stands like an axe, he does.
I was wet, cold, and hungry. But somehow the laughter did not sting me. It warmed me. Somehow I looked down at my ex, and I laughed, too. The laughter seemed to tie us together, and I became one of the crew. We were a seafaring lot, and our laughter rolled out for 10 years, until the king's troops whipped the laughter out of the colonies and taxed them into poverty. We became sailors without ships, while troops paraded in Boston Square. The crowds grew restless, and the skipper said,
"Is the crowd restless, sure. Both sticks and stones against rifles, eh? Is suicide. There's no way to beat off the soldiers.
There is one way.
Well, what's that, Attucks?
Strike a blow that'll show the colonists They can drive the soldiers out of the country.
Well, once it's done, it's fine. But it's most certain death for the leader. It's not a job for luck or chance. The man who leads can't waver. I say, let him who wants most to be free speak up and strike the first blow.
I'll take the lead.
All right. Good man. Good luck.
I led the Sealers into the square against the British soldiers. 200 townspeople followed, and we threw ourselves on the troops. I felt their muskets pop tear at my chest. I then saw the people rush on and take the square. I knew the people of Boston would rise in the morning and take the body of a man with knocked knees, along with other fallen patriots, and plant them like seeds in the same grave. I had struck the first blow, and I could call my children to strike until they were free.
Oh, Harriet.
And the call of Crispus Attucks came down to me in the Maryland slave cabins where I was born. But there were others who answered it first. There was a carpenter of Charleston, Denmark Vesey, who walked into the Virginia marketplace with his slave leaders, Peter Poyas, Gullah Jack, and Roller Hard, and spoke to the cherry woman.
When you see the militia coming, woman, warn us.
I'll call blood-red cherries when I see them.
All right. Then go sell your cherries. We'll go over and see what we can buy at the arsenal.
Yeah, that's right.
Easy now. Peter.
Yeah?
Sing along. The revolution is on.
When the saints go marching in, when the saints go marching in, and the Lord I want to be in that number, when the saints go marching in.
And Denmark led the slaves toward the arsenal. The cherry woman watched for the militia. And on plantations, farms, and in cabins 100 miles around, slaves waited at the grapevine to hear the arsenal crack. Blood red, cherry! Blood red! The cherry woman saw the militia and cried out, but the militia broke inside the marketplace and took over the arsenal. They took 100 dead men to the grave. And they took Denmark Vesey to court.
Hang him, gotta be hanged.
Denmark Vesey, before I pass sentence on you for your rebellion against the state, you have a word to explain your crimes?
I have a word.
Then speak it, now.
You speak of my crimes. I feel no guilt. To be idle while other men fought to be free was a crime. I was not idle.
Is that all you can say to explain your treachery?
No. My treachery began when I read the Declaration of Independence. It said all men are created equal. It grew when I read that Black Crispus Attucks died to help the colonies be free. Did he die just to free white men or all men? Then I read what Ben Franklin, Tom Paine, Lafayette, and Jefferson had said. And their words warmed my blood. They wanted their revolution to make all men free and equal. They left off with some men free and some slaves. I took up where they left off. If my life is the price I pay for my deed, take it. I'll pay it. But until all men are free and equal, the revolution will go on. And those who come after me will hear my call for freedom and heed it.
Oh, Harriet.
I heeded the call of Attucks and Vesey. I escaped from slavery and I returned and made 19 trips into the armed slave camps and liberated 300 souls, guided them north past patrols and overseers, worked with and agreed to strike with John Brown and Garrison and Phillips, fought in the Civil War, and heard a tall shadow of a woman, Sojourner Truth, answer the call of Attucks and V.C. Stand before convention halls and say to men, there's men here who say women shouldn't have the right to vote or hold office because they're not equal. I put on a snicker because I say women must be helped alone, lifted over ditches, have the best of everything. Well, nobody ever helped me along or over ditches or gave me the best of anything. Then ain't I, old woman?
Of course, yes.
Look at me. Look at my arms and hands. See, I've plowed and planted and gathered crops into barns, and no man could do it better. And ain't I a woman? I've borne 5 children and seen most of them sold off into slavery. And when I called out for men to help me, there were none willing to do it. I've given milk to children, black and white, and bred them all from the cradle, seen them grow up, indifferent, hostile, and I've gotten out on the road alone to teach them to get along like brothers. I've felt a mother's grief and done a man's job. And ain't I a woman? In this world, few men have had a fair chance to live and grow, and almost no women have. When men run the world alone, it runs into war and slavery for men and women. It'll do well in the future that more women had a hand in the running of it. I've helped men run their affairs, and like Harriet Tubman, I've helped you all become free. And ain't I a woman?
The tall shadow that was Sojourner Truth helped me answer the call. There was the call of Frederick Douglass, who said,
when I went to the White House to speak to Mr. Lincoln about the Civil War, he asked my opinion on how to end the war. And I said, fire must be met with water, darkness with light, and the fight against liberty must be met with a fight against slavery. The simplest way to end the war now waged by slaveholders is to strike down slavery itself. Let the slaves and free colored people be called into service and formed into a liberating army.
Abe Lincoln studied Frederick Douglass's viewpoint, and soon thereafter was issued the call for Negro troops. They issued the Emancipation Proclamation. The slaves heard the call, they answered, and the world heard Lincoln say,
no human power can stop the war without emancipating the slaves. I, Abraham Lincoln, proclaim that all persons held as slaves within any state in rebellion against the United States shall be henceforward and forever free.
This was the birth of a new day. And of this day, one of my children wrote,
there was joy in the South. It rose like perfume, like a prayer. Men stood quivering. Slim, dark girls, wild and beautiful with wrinkled hair, wept silently. Young women, black, tawny white and gray, raised great voices and shouted to God across the fields and up the rocks and the mountains. A great song arose. The loveliest thing born this side of the seas. It was a new song. It throbbed and thundered on the world's ear with a message seldom voiced by man. At last, democracy was to be justified of its own children. All that was beauty, all that was love, all that was truth, stood on the top of these mad mornings and sang with the stars. A great human sob shrieked in the wind and tossed its tears upon the sea. Free, free, free.
This was the birth of a new day, and I had helped deliver it. I had answered the call of my forebears, and I called them to my children struggling to keep the hard-won freedom. There was the day of the defeat of the Reconstruction when one of my children resisted those who would bring the old slavery and said,
"Resistance to tyranny is obedience to God."
She was
resistance.
Ida B. Wells, and she heard the call.
Oh, Harriet.
And there were those of my children who were spreading over the world toward their destination. There was Matthew.
Yes, I am Matthew Henson. I was named after a man who helped write the gospel. I didn't write the gospel. But I wrote my name. I wrote my name on the North Pole. I was one of Harriet's children who were homeless after the Civil War. I had walked barefooted for 40 days looking for work and a home, and had come to Boston. Like Crispus Attucks 100 years before, I knocked on the hatch of a whaling ship.
Who the devil's out there at this time of night? Well, lad, what are you looking for?
A job.
A job, is it? You're as skinny as a rail. You'll be kidnapped by the first wind that blows. Be off with you. Go on.
Yes, sir.
Hey, wait a minute. Hold on there.
Yes, sir.
Hey, boy, where's your mother?
Dead.
And go to your father.
He's dead.
Well, then, come on inside. You'll be catching your death of cold out here, and you'll be blaming me for it. Now, see here, my laddie buck. It's no picnic I'm giving you. You'll pay your way. Nobody ever got a thing from Captain O'Hara for nothing, and you'll not be spoiling my record.
Oh, no, sir.
No. Oh, no. You ain't strong enough for real seafaring work. I figure, though, you can lift a pencil. Yeah, right. I'll show you how to keep the dates in my log. See? Look here, read these numbers. Well, don't sit there with your mouth open. Read aloud.
I can't read.
You can't read? Yeah, then I suppose you can't write either.
I guess I ain't much good.
Now, wait a minute. I'll have no blubbering on my boat. Hold up your head. There ain't nothing to reading and writing that Captain O'Hara can't teach you. Besides some mechanics, navigation, and sailoring.
No?
No. How'd you like to learn to write your name?
Fine.
All right, then get a grip on this chalk here. Hold it tight now. Now I'll hold your hand and guide it over the floor. Hey, what is your name, anyhow?
Matthew Henson.
Oh, a good seafarer name. Like Matthew in the Bible?
Yes, sir, I guess so.
Fine. Now then, hold the chalk and I'll spell it out.
All right.
M-A-T-T-H-E-W-H-E-N-S-O-N. There you are.
Is that how my name looks?
That's how your name looks, my lad. Now we'll just rub it out and start over.
Oh, no, don't rub it out, please.
Well, you don't want it to stay on forever, do you?
I do. How do you make it stay?
Well, now, you've got to do something like, well, inventing something or discovering something.
What can I discover?
I don't know. They've pretty much discovered all there is to be discovered, except perhaps the North Pole.
How do you get there?
Well, dummy boy, just go as far north as you can go. Somewhere where there's no east and no west. We'll be north of the north wind, and where every step you take will carry you south. Then you'll be known you're at the North Pole.
I never forgot the captain or what he taught me. When I joined Commander Perry's polar expedition, I fought the ice and snow for 14 years and escaped the death that had taken men in other expeditions. And on our last trip, I was sent to find it alone because some called me the Daniel Boone of the Arctic. And I whipped my dog sled over the frozen ocean until I came to a place where the midnight sun stood on the horizon, never setting, never rising. There was no longitude, no latitude, no east, no west. I was standing on the axis of the earth. I was standing on the axis of the earth. I had become the first man to reach the North Pole. I bent down and wrote in the ice, Matthew Henson. I was one of Harriet's children.
Oh, Harriet.
Matthew had found his way to the heart of the earth. And at the same time, in the same month, in Chicago, another of my children was probing the human heart. He was Dr. Dan Williams.
Yes, I had thought about this suture of the human heart for a decade before I dared try it. I'd studied it and worked hard to find a way to heal it when it's cut and wounded. Doctors everywhere have tried it and failed. But one night, July 10th, 1893, 2 a.m. in the morning, they brought in a man into Provident Hospital who had been stabbed in the heart. At first, his heartbeat was so faint, my stethoscope couldn't pick it up. Then I found it. There wasn't time to call in a big staff or special equipment. I had to work fast. And with these hands, I took out the heart and stitched it 6 times. As I stood over my patient, frightened and yet determined, all my research, my study, my experiments flashed before me. But this wasn't an experiment. This was a life in my hand.
You cannot give the patient much anesthesia. He's too weak to stand it. He'll have his eyes open, watching all the time.
Scalpel.
Cut your window over the 4th rib.
Sponge.
Tie off the vessels.
Clamps.
Lift out the heart.
Sponge.
Take the stitches in between the heartbeat.
Suture.
If the stitches hold back the flow, you've got a chance.
Sponge.
But remember, keep in rhythm with the heartbeat. Keep the rhythm. Never break that rhythm. Good. Now quickly tie the vessels and remove the clamps. I think you'll make it. I think you'll make it.
Yes, he did make it. And I went on to teach other doctors how to sew up the human heart. I had helped the earth to move. I, too, was one of Harriet's children.
Oh, Harriet.
I'm one of her children, too. I'm Langston Hughes. Some call me the Shakespeare of Harlem. And I wrote for Harriet Tubman. A Negro Speaks of Rivers. I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were new. I built my hut near the Congo and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans. And I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
Oh, Harriet. Oh, Harriet.
Yes, those are the voices of my children. And when their voices called, rockets burst in my head and the earth moved under me. They are the voices of people I helped guide toward their destination, freedom.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of Harriet's Children. Today's program has featured excerpts from outstanding Destination Freedom scripts of the past year. This is, of course, our first anniversary program, and we are honored on this occasion by this transcribed message from Governor Adlai Stevenson.
When radio or any other medium of communication is able to combine entertainment and education in such a way as to promote understanding and tolerance among the American people, it is serving its greatest usefulness. Especially when this is done with such success as WMAQ's excellent program, Destination Freedom. In the short space of 1 year, this program has done much to familiarize us with the many contributions which Negroes have made to life in America. It has dramatized these achievements so that we could better appreciate their significance. The presentation of the program is in itself a demonstration that men and women of both races can work closely together with full respect for each other's abilities. It is not surprising that this program has won a large listener audience and that it has been rewarded with several citations for excellence as educational entertainment. I sincerely congratulate WMAQ and the producers and the cast of this show on its first anniversary. I know I am only one of many who hope that Destination Freedom will be on the air for many years to come.
Thank you, Governor Stevenson. Among our studio guests this morning is the Executive Secretary of the Chicago Urban League. It gives me pleasure to present him to you now, Mr. Sidney Williams.
Thank you. No organization knows better the terrible results of the misunderstanding and prejudice that can develop among citizens because of ignorance, one of the other. In a real sense, this is why the Urban League exists, what gives it meaning, this lack of understanding between white and Negro citizens. Obviously, then, the League welcomes and encourages all new ways and methods of education that can help bring about better understanding between our white and Negro citizens. Radio is one of these great ways and methods. Destination Freedom is one of the finest of these ways and methods. The Chicago Urban League is therefore happy to add its commendations and thanks to radio station WMAQ, not only for making available its channels, but for the excellent cooperation of its production staff. And in a very real sense, to Richard Durham for his fine writings, his stimulating organization and presentation of inspiring incidents in the struggle of us Negro people for freedom and equality, which is of the same fine quality of all peoples whose destination is freedom.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Destination Freedom, written by Richard Durham and produced by Homer Heck, is directed by Dick Loughran. The role of Harriet Tubman was portrayed by Weslin Tilden. Others in the cast included Janice Kingslow, Jess Pugh, Dean Almquist, George Kluge, Oscar Brown Jr., and Fred Finkard. Special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. This is Charles Chan inviting you to be with us again next week, when Destination Freedom will tell the story of Dorothy Maynor. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.